Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, the show for people who want to maximize their marketing potential. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy and everything in between, each episode will feature industry experts that share their insights and provide actionable tips to help you achieve your marketing goals. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for our guest today, Justin Moore. Justin, thank you so much for joining me today on the Grin Gets Real podcast. Talk about just kind of the creator's perspective when it comes to the business of influencer marketing. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Let's dive right into it. I'd love for you to share kind of the evolution of how you went from product manager to creator to, you know, having all of these other side businesses that feed into just kind of the creator world.
I honestly owe everything to my wife. My wife, April, she started making YouTube videos in our little studio apartment when we first got together, almost 14 years ago now. So I was in medical devices, essentially, prior to this.
Yes.
And so I definitely was not in the like creator space at all. And so she started her YouTube channel. This was like way back in the day before. She started her channel almost 11 years ago now. And so this was back before you could make money on YouTube. Yeah. There was no partner program. This was just essentially a way for her to find a community of people who were also into cosmetics and makeup and things like that. And so, you know, I kept encouraging her. She would watch Michelle Phan and like other creators back in the OG YouTubers, we call them. And I was like, you should do this. You're really good at this.
Yes.
And so, and literally when we met, she had never watched YouTube ever. She thought it was like cat videos. And I was like, no, like you got to like go on here. It's awesome. And so like essentially it's the way the whole thing worked out is it's really funny. And so she started growing her channel. You know, it wasn't like this conscious like content strategy type thing that it is now, right? It was like, I'm just gonna make videos, have fun. And so brands started knocking. And so she's like, what do I do? I have no idea what to do. And I'm like, okay, I'm over here like in business school by this point. And I'm like, okay, well, I could look at the contract. I could like help you out with the behind the scenes. And so I started helping out with that. And then I started people getting on her videos started getting really interested in our relationship. And so I started making cameos in her videos, like boyfriend does my makeup tag or something like that, right? We have these hilarious videos from like a long time ago doing that. And so then we started a family vlog when we got engaged and married and had our first child, both our children, you know, so we have both of our birth videos on YouTube, you know, crazy enough, like PG versions of them, obviously.
Of course.
But, you know, and then we started a cooking channel. So it's just like as our life progressed, we started putting out different types of content, right? And so over the last, you know, 10, 11 years that we've been on social media, we have worked with hundreds, literally hundreds of different brands on sponsored content, branded content campaigns. And then about 5 years ago, I decided to start an influencer agency called Trending Family. Because we saw that there was this void in the market for like there was a lot of interest in partnering with like beauty gurus and things like that, high gloss content. But there was this explosion of like home video, family video 2.0, essentially, right? With vlogging and things like that. And so there was no one really in this space serving that niche. From our experience working with brands, we knew that like CPG, retailers, consumer electronics, those types of brands, like they're really keen to like tap into that demographic, right? That was kind of the wedge that we carved out for ourselves as an agency, is we are only going to be working with family-friendly creators, people who are wholesome, people who, you know, are not saying crazy things online. You know, they're not swearing a lot. They're not talking about super controversial topics, this type of thing. So my wife and I personally, we've made over $3 million working with brands over the last number of years. We, through my agency, we've paid out another $2 million to other creators. The impact that we've been able to have both for ourselves personally as a career, as well as like other creators, has been truly amazing, right? And so like the final evolution of my journey has been that I've recently started teaching the next generation of creators about how to be more business savvy. So I started another YouTube channel and social media platforms called Creator Wizard. And I'm essentially helping people through all the different like nitty gritty things that you need to know, monetization, diversification, incorporation, you know, when you need to formalize as a business.
What I think is so interesting is that evolution of business when it comes to it, right? So I'd love to dive into as a creator, as an influencer, how do I tee myself up for that? Do you create a media kit? Do you have a rate card? What does that look like for the creator?
really depends on what you're looking to get out of being a creator. So if it's like, if you want it to be a full-time income, different set of decisions that I think you need to make, right? Because if you have, you know, most creators start out, it's like a side hustle, right? Mm-hmm. So they have a 9-to-5 job or whatever, and then they're making content on the side. And maybe the dream is that their side hustle income will replace their, you know, 9-to-5 full-time income.
Yeah.
And then there are creators, there are a lot of creators who have never had a real job, right? Like they may perhaps started making content in high school. Maybe they were like video game streamers on Twitch or something, or lifestyle vloggers or fashion vloggers, or whatever. And they were able to grow a career to a point where they were actually making meaningful income in high school. And then when they graduated, they never really had to get a typical job. So I would say that the path to being a creator is quite different now than it was 10 years ago when we started out, because making a career as a creator was not really a thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like people, when we told people that we were YouTubers or that we did it full time, like let's say 6 years ago, people, literally every single time that we said that, people would be like, so how do you make money doing that? Right. But like now, I think it has pervaded the cultural zeitgeist to a certain degree that people get that you can make money on online as an influencer now, right? Like just a normal person, a normal consumer scrolling through your Instagram feed, you see, you know, if you follow any creators or influencers, it's like, oh, paid partnership with X, right? Brand, right? So so it is a thing. And so the mindset when you're going into creating content has definitely shifted for most creators these days. And it really is something that you can be very purposeful about it now and be like, look, I want to be a creator. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be very intentful about how I put out content and monetize my platform. People are monetizing their platforms a lot sooner these days. There's a lot more pathways in terms of merchandise and courses and digital products and ebooks. And there's a lot more appetite, I think, for that type of thing these days than there may have been in the past.
From like a creation standpoint, like what are your thoughts on how easy it is to be a creator, to live in that space? Because I'm a director of content. I know how much goes into creating something as simple as a blog post, right? Mm-hmm. With images and words and outlines and all of that stuff. Like, what's that process for a creator and how much time is involved with that?
Yeah, for a good three, four years there, we were daily vlogging on just one channel. Mm-hmm. Literally, we didn't miss an upload for several years at 365 days a year.
That's insane.
And these were 15-minute videos. And that was just one channel. Like we had other, mm-hmm. you know, we had my wife's beauty channel. So she was doing 1 to 2 times a week on there. We had a cooking channel we were maintaining. We were pumping out a ton of content for a long time there. And it honestly is very, very taxing because our followers, like, you know, obviously there are the majority of our followers in our community are like very positive and they get it and things like that. But there are people who just don't understand that like the 15 minutes that you're watching is like a heavily curated slice of our day.
Yes.
Right. Right. So it's not like so it's like if you don't see us doing something in the video, it doesn't mean we didn't do it. It just means that we chose not to share that. Right.
Yeah.
I think that that's definitely something that people get more now, I would say. But it's not just about the money either, right? Because we ultimately, like, you know, at the height of doing daily vlogging and things like that, we were making a lot of money, but it was so mentally and physically taxing that we ultimately chose to like dial it back, not for financial reasons. It was more for like, it just was becoming too much of a toll. I think that's another interesting thing to keep in perspective for your audience is that it's not just always about the money for creators. Like sometimes you have seen this with a lot of like high profile influencers, creators that at the height of their prosperity, essentially, or height of their careers, they have disappeared from social media because of the immense pressure and burden that some of these platforms can put on them. So it definitely can be challenging, but it also super rewarding, for other reasons.
One of the things that I am really curious about is, do you do kind of coaching for creators on kind of understanding what that balance is when they are asking for a specific paid amount?
I think that the calculus is typically around work output, right? So if you want to dedicate, let's say a YouTube video, if you want a dedicated YouTube video versus an integrated YouTube video, right? So a dedicated video is as it sounds, the entire video is like dedicated to that brand. And then an integrated video is more like a shout out. It's like, let's say 2 to 3 minutes at the, you know, in the first half of the video towards that brand. And then the remaining 10 minutes of the video or whatever is just like the rest of their day or standard content they would incorporate there. So I do think that there is that. I don't think creators are quite as purposeful about, you know, line iteming that stuff out in terms of calculating my hourly rate and how much it's going to, you know, what's my hourly rate to edit this and distribute it and all that stuff. I don't think they're that quite that purposeful. They should be. That's one thing I'm trying to teach them to do. honestly, creators sometimes discount all the expertise that they have, because I oftentimes call creators production companies in a box.
Yeah.
Because they are, right? Like, they are creative services. They are the production team. They have this distribution channel, right? So they have they're expert marketers, right? So it's like, I think creators oftentimes, they forget that when they're doing negotiations with brands.
Yeah.
And by that same token, I think brands also would do well to realize that as well, because if they are partnering with a creator, they may not have to go out there and hire a production company or hire an agency or hire actors and actresses to star in this content.
Absolutely.
And so especially if they're able to repurpose the content from the influencer and things like that, there's a lot of value that the creator is bringing too. And so valuing them only on their organic reach or following or things like that, I think sometimes brands are missing the larger picture.
As an influencer, if I'm reaching out to a brand, what metrics should I arm myself with when approaching a brand?
I encourage creators to create case studies based on past campaign goal types. So let's say, you know, pretty much the three main campaign goal types for most, influencer marketing campaigns are brand awareness, conversion, right? So for like sales or something, or content repurposing. So the main goal of that is that the brand actually wants to get that content to like repost it on their Instagram or you know, use it for paid ads or something like that, right? So the goal type is the most important thing. And then also having one for each type of content vertical that they have. So let's say that they create lifestyle and home decor, that's the type of influencer they are. So they would have six case studies. They would have a lifestyle and awareness case study, and a lifestyle and conversion case study, right? And then also home decor and awareness, right? So it's like, the reason that I often give that advice is that if you're a brand, you want to have an apples to apples comparison, right? If you're going to go to this influencer and say, have you ever partnered with a brand like us before? And what was the result? You want to be able to, as a creator, to like be like, here you go, right? Yeah. Like, I partnered with, they're not a competitor of yours, but they're in a similar field. It's a similar type of campaign goal. Like I also encourage creators to try to get conversion data, right? Although not all brands are able to share that because they consider it proprietary, but I think the reason that most creators don't do that is that I think some of them may be scared that their performance wasn't great, right? Right.
And it's so, only validated if they see the number.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And honestly, though, but basically my point is, and I have a course that I actually help creators learn a lot more detail about brand deals. It's called Brand Deal Wizard. But basically it's something I teach them is that how are you going to improve if you don't know how it performed? Whether it's good or bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, are you just going to continue going down the same path and you're going to continue not performing? Like a smart creator, a professional creator who is doing this for a living, they are open to critique and want to understand how they can improve. So those are kind of the two main things that I advise to that creators should have, you know, in kind of their armory.
Now for an influencer creator, are there kind of must-haves before even going down that path?
There's essentially three things that I think are critical that I advise creators to remember. And the first one is act professional, right? A lot of creators don't take partnering with brands very seriously. I basically advise them, if you're super communicative, if you turn in, you know, high quality content, you're instantly going to stand out from the pack amongst all the other creators who are not, right? Number two is you really do need to have a long-term outlook. I think honestly, our success has compounded over the years, especially with brand partnerships, because we have maintained this very robust Rolodex of brand partners over the years, and they just continue to come back to us. And so again, that kind of compounds over time. And so I try to educate creators to like, look, lay the groundwork and get on the radar of these brands and these agencies, especially agencies who represent multiple brands in similar product categories. That's when you're going to start to see this kind of snowball effect with your income as they come back to you over and over. And then finally, I think just treating brands as long-term partners and not just like fast money.
Yeah.
Right. Because I like the analogy I give is that what I think most creators do is that they quit their 9-to-5 job every month, every single month. With every deal, right? It's like they do the deal, they get paid, and then they completely move on and they like hustle for the next deal.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, how exhausting is that? Right. Like, why would you do that? Right. Like, you need to, I try to stay away from like using words like churn and things like that, because that's like my mindset.
So as
like
business,
a,
right?
As it's a very business mindset. It doesn't translate very well like talking with creators, but it's like, that's why I came up with this like 9-to-5 job that they're quitting every month. Don't do that. Don't look for a 9-to-5 job every month. Go back to the same brand that you just partnered with very successfully and figure out how you can partner with them next month or figure out some sort of like 12-month deal or quarterly deal or whatever, where you're doing always on content for them. So again, it's like I'm fighting tooth and nail to try to educate creators around this type of thing. But that those are kind of the three main things I think about.
For influencers, when they're looking for brands that they may want to represent, is it kind of like the same methodology? Look for things that you love and then pitch yourself to the brand? Or is that too simplistic?
No, I mean, I think it definitely is. It's something that I talk about with creators too. I like for creators, I think it's the most difficult for creators who have fairly well-defined niche, right? So if I'm some sort of like very, like a hobbyist in some very specific thing, sometimes you feel like, well, who would ever partner with me? Who would ever sponsor me? Yeah. And I recommend them doing this little activity called the Brands in Your House Audit. Look, you know, if you're a lifestyle influencer, what's in your closet, right? If you are a hobbyist creator, go to that area of your home or your apartment where all your gear is, right? And just like, look at all the brands. Like it can be very instantly obvious to you, like, oh, wow, there's like the top 10 brands I should reach out to because I'm already using them, right? I have the brand affinity. And then also not enough creators do this is they view other creators in their niche as competitors. And so they don't follow a ton of other creators in their niche.
Yeah.
And so by virtue of that, they are potentially missing out on knowing what other brands are partnering with creators in that niche. It is something that I teach in my course is how to do very effective cold outreach to brands to illustrate to them why you have such profound brand affinity for them and why it would be such a good partnership.
Yeah. And you would think taking that approach just kind of gets you that yes, because that's essentially the key for influencer marketing. And it's not a transaction. It is a person that is like speaking about your brand. For me, I know even in SaaS, having a customer talk about how much they love a product is way more effective than me saying, yes, we're awesome. I already know we're awesome, but you should really hear it from somebody else who is using the tool, right?
Most challenging thing I think for creators about that process is that, as you know, when you reach out to a brand, like brands have budgetary cycles, right? Yeah. So when you reach out, they may not necessarily be recruiting for a paid campaign at that point. It can be quite discouraging for a creator to do a bunch of outreach and then, you know, let's say they do 20 email cold prospecting or whatever, and 19 of them say, well, we're not recruiting for paid campaigns right now. And then basically you get the message or you think that it's just not an effective method. And so what I do in my course is I retrain people's mindset to be like, look, yes, you may get like shut down for that particular time, but you have to understand how these planning processes work, right? So yes, they may not be recruiting for a campaign at that time, but if you continue to touch them for, you know, let's say 3 to 4 times over the next 3 to 6 months, you are going to remain top of mind for when they are recruiting for a paid campaign. But it's hard to have that mentality if you don't have someone telling you that. Otherwise, you just have the evidence that like, oh, this is a not effective strategy. I'm just going to go back to creating content and waiting until an email lands in my inbox.
It's almost thought of as a rejection if they get the no. Do you ever advise people if they do get the no, or maybe in some of the initial outreach, to kind of pitch more of product seeding, right? Like, hey, I really love your brand. I'd love to just collaborate with you, not necessarily in a paid campaign. You know, maybe it's I love this particular product. I'd love to, I don't know if you even ask for the product, but do you know what I mean? Is there a product seeding element to versus like a paid promotion ask?
There are absolutely a lot of influencers out there who would be excited about product seeding and free product and gifted and that kind of thing. One thing I will say for brands who are listening to this is that have realistic expectations about a product seeding campaign. So rather than you have like 50 talking points or requirements for that collaboration, have more of understanding that like, okay, I'm going to be sending it to this influencer. They'll probably post about it, but I may not have as much control about exactly what they say because it's, in my opinion, it's a little bit unrealistic for you to expect them to do like this laundry list of things and like cut 10 different TikToks and all this stuff, right? From just a product that's $100, right? So you have to understand that one of the values of compensating an influencer is that you do. If you're a brand who wants a little bit more control over the asset that you ultimately get, if you need to get that soundbite so you can get a 30-second cut down to like run an Instagram ad, that's why you compensate an influencer to do that because then you have a little bit more control.
I do have another question, though, in regards to just kind of content creation. One of the things that we tend to run into a lot is like, okay, whether it's paid or product seeding, I'm not getting the right content that I want in order to be repurposed, right? Because from a brand perspective, there is so much ROI from influencer marketing is being able to repurpose across other marketing strategies. But what kind of advice can you give to a brand who's kind of struggling to get that right content from the creator, right? Because you want to give them their creative space, but you also want to get what you want to get.
My advice about this is try to involve the creators earlier on in the campaign planning process.
Okay.
So rather than fully baking the brief, right, around how you want the campaign to be executed, why not reach out to a few creators that you think would be a good fit and then ask them how they would bring it to life, right? Oh. I mean, maybe there's a trend on TikTok that would be perfect that you don't know about, right? Or maybe there's a certain hashtag trending on Instagram that you can take advantage of. As a brand, you literally cannot possibly keep track of everything on social media, right? Of like everything that's working. So you really should try to lean on creators. And again, try to compensate like some creators for this type of market research. This isn't something, you know, you're going to like email, like ask for a bunch, an hour of a creator's time just to like pick their brain. No, like allocate a budget, allocate, you know, a couple $1,000 or whatever, and basically create kind of like a creator advisory board, because creators have their fingers on the pulse of like what's working on social media, because they're doing it day in and day out, right? So it's unrealistic as a brand to think that you can parachute in once every quarter and like run a campaign and make sure that it's timely and relevant in that cultural moment, right? So you really do need to have a faster cycle time of like how often you're monitoring what's going on social media to ensure that when this campaign actually launches, that it's relevant.
Yeah, that's really great advice. I started actually taking notes as you were talking. well, because I think that they are really great notes. I think this podcast is about the business of influencer marketing, because it is a business from the creative side, right? If a brand has a good understanding that it is a business, even if it is product seeding, right, versus paid, and the same for the influencer, identifying that, okay, this is my business, treating it like that, it changes the lens that you look at what you're doing, right? And then you can be very strategic with the content that you create, the content that you ask for from a brand perspective. So I really like all those things that you said. I have a couple more questions for you. One of them has to do with the social media platforms. I know that from a brand perspective, I've always told other businesses, you can't be all things to all people. Just because there is a social media channel does not mean that you have to be on it. Identify one that you love, you know the objectives, and then go for it. And then as you perfect that, move out. Would you say it's the same approach for influencers, creators, or do you have different advice to give for a creator who's like, what social media platform should I be pursuing from a business perspective?
One trap that a lot of brands fall into is that they think they can repurpose one piece of content on every platform. They think, okay, I'm just going to like make a long form YouTube video, and then I'll like cut down a cut for like Instagram and cut for Facebook and cut for TikTok and like all this stuff, right? Yeah. You'll often see like TikTok handles of brands where it's like literally reposts of their YouTube videos 1 minute. And it's like literally it's like landscape. It's not even portrait, right?
Yeah.
So it's like one of the biggest pieces of advice I give to brands is like, okay, you need to identify what is your consumer persona, right? Who are you targeting? And if it's Gen Z, then maybe your only strategy should be TikTok right now. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's all you're doing. You don't need to be everywhere. Maybe it's Instagram too, but like, you know, you don't necessarily need to have a presence everywhere. And I think a lot of brands fall into that trap is feeling like they do need to be everywhere. And what happens then is that all the content is average and none of it is stellar. Talking about TikTok, there is a TikTok style.
Yes.
Right? Like if you spend any amount of time on the app, you know that there are certain types of formats of content that do very well. And if unless you understand what that format is, it's unrealistic as a brand to think that you can repurpose your content that you're posting elsewhere. And so that's like honestly my main tip that I can give to brands, because a creator is doing that all day long. They are not repurposing their content on all these different platforms. They have a concerted strategy on a couple different platforms and they're running with it. And they understand, like me, for example, like I probably should be on Clubhouse, but I just don't have time to like spend 2 hours a day like talking on Clubhouse, right? Yes, you have to make this opportunity cost calculation as a creator to understand, okay, like where is most of my income coming from? Where is most of my audience spending their time? Is this other platform that I feel like I maybe need to be on? Is it in terms of my long-term content strategy? Is it, you know, if I wasn't on there, would it be detrimental to my business in the long run? So yes, it is a daily like decision that you have to make as a creator, and you just have to like pick a strategy and don't alter from it until you really give it a college try.
Okay. Well, I'm going to dive into prediction time. So what changes do you see happening with influencer marketing over the next year, over the next couple of years? How do you see that evolving?
There's three things that I think about. So first and foremost, I think that honestly, more and more creators are going full time, right? Mm-hmm. And realizing the need to diversify their businesses, honestly. It's become extremely evident to anyone watching, whether it's YouTube or Instagram or whatever, that you cannot rely on the fickleness of social media algorithms to continue to provide income stability, right? Whether it's monetization on YouTube or whether it's like your organic reach being greatly reduced in the Instagram feed. There are all of these products being introduced right now to help creators monetize in new ways, whether it's direct fan funding mechanisms through like patronage, Patreon, things like that, or cameo type models or things like that. There's just so many more ways that you can monetize as a creator right now. And so obviously brand partnerships are a big part for most folks, including myself and my wife. But I think that as this becomes more of an actual like job that you can like actually make a full-time, you know, living being a creator, that, you know, the diversification is going to continue to happen. And so the second piece of that, kind of the counterpoint to that, which I think is really critical for brands, is that they need to be more diligent about who they're partnering with, because more influencers, unfortunately, are going to be buying inauthentic behavior. Followers and likes. Because unfortunately, a lot of brands still recruit based on vanity metrics, right? They just like go on Instagram, they search, they do hashtag searching or whatever. They find an influencer that has 100,000 followers. It looks like they're, you know, the average likes per post, just like visually looking at it seems good. Okay, I'm going to reach out to that person. But the bummer about that strategy is that those creators or creators who buy likes rely on your lack of brand's lack of due diligence because they continue to get deals. And so they continue to be rewarded for buying likes. So it's this very vicious cycle. It's a big problem, I think, honestly, in most spaces. So whether it's like software that you have that can, you know, detect inauthentic behavior or growth in, you know, inauthentic growth in followers or things like that, I really, really do think that that's an important thing that brands need to look at moving forward, especially as more and more creators rely on brand partnerships for their income. Because like, let's face it, they'll get desperate. If brand partnerships don't come through, then they can't provide for themselves and their family. So it's tough. I understand. But like, as a brand, you really do need to have a higher level of vetting for your influencer partners.
The key is really knowing what kind of audience you're trying to go after as well, too. Mm-hmm. And then marrying that with the type of influencer creator that you're looking for. I think sometimes brands lose out on like the simplicity of even that, right? Like just who are your buyer personas? Who are you trying to reach? And versus looking at the vanity metrics, who has the right audience that I want them to speak out to and can really be articulate with sharing my brand story, sharing, you know, my product and all of those things.
Let me just give you a quick little like easy way to determine whether someone is buying an authentic behavior. So if you go to someone's Instagram, for example, and let's say they have, they post it and within 30 minutes, they get 7,000 likes. Right? That's very, very unlikely that that's actually authentic. And also 7,000 likes and like, let's say 4 comments, right? The likelihood of that type of engagement, like to comment ratio is very, very unlikely. And also you can see creators' profiles who like an image. So you go in there and you can actually like look, and if all their profiles have like no profile picture, they've only like had their account for like 3 weeks, they're not following that creator, that's another easy tell. The likelihood of them actually finding that on the explore page and liking that is very low, honestly. So there's all these methods that you can use. Obviously software programs help, but if you don't have access to a software program that does that, just a simple check of like going in and looking at who's actually engaging with their post, it's a pretty easy way to determine that. And final thing in terms of like a prediction is, I think that more and more brands are realizing that they need to own the influencer marketing expertise in their business and stop kind of like outsourcing this to their PR agencies, which is how it's been done for a while, right? So using a tool like Grin, right?
Thanks for the plug.
Of course. It's like, honestly, it's like to do that is critical because it can very quickly get overwhelming, especially if you're wanting to scale your influencer marketing strategy, right? Like, so maybe you did have an intern or an associate or a coordinator or something doing your influencer outreach and things like that. And if you're seeing this tactic work and you're wanting to scale it, you know, if you're wanting to partner with, let's say 100 nano influencers, 500 micro influencers, 1,000, like, right? So as these numbers get bigger and you need individual contracts with all these folks, like there's all this back and forth, all this, right? So it's like you can quickly see as a brand how that could get challenging to manage. And so you definitely do need tools if you identify influencer marketing as a core part of your mix moving forward.
Now, I did say that was the last question, but you brought up something in your predictions that I would love to kind of pick your brain on before sure. we do wrap it up is, and it pertains to fraudulent influencers, right? Or, mm-hmm. you know, those mm-hmm. who are buying their audience. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are, if you have any thoughts on influencer pods, which are groups of influencers that are like, hey, I will like your stuff. You will like mine. Mm-hmm. You will comment this. Like, do you think that that's one, an issue? And two, like, what are your thoughts in general about it?
The most interesting thing development that I've seen about engagement pods and influencer pods is that I've started seeing that language banning that behavior creep uh-huh. into influencer contracts. Here's the thing. It's one thing to have, like, let's say a group text with your friends or whatever and your other creators yeah. and things like that. And you're kind of like supporting each other. But if you are in like an actual engagement pod where the sole purpose of it is to like boost everyone's like likes and comments yeah. and things like that, I do think that that's a little weird. So I don't know. That's just kind of my opinion about it. And I think that the people who are, and honestly, like there has been blood on the streets over the last like 6 months, because Instagram, for like most creators I know, especially Instagram, their people's organic reach has gone down by like 25 to 50%. It's crazy, right? Yeah. On both feed posts as well as like stories and things like that. So it's like people get desperate, and so that's why they're doing these activities. And so it is a challenge that I think the platforms are going to need to address, because like the strange thing is that a lot of this behavior is like easily detectable by yeah. like most platforms, right? And so sometimes creators will get there. I'm like part of like a bunch of private Facebook groups about being a creator. Mm-hmm. And you like swap tips and things like this. And like all the time I see people saying like, oh my God, my account got disabled, like all this stuff. So they like the platforms are like enforcing it, but it's not like this blanket ban where yeah. it's like, oh, they see you doing this once and then they like disable your account. No, it's like flagrant behavior, like over and over and over. I honestly, like I'm not sure if they're ever going to like draw a line in the sand, like saying that you can't do these things anymore. But if I was a brand, like, to answer your question more specifically, like I would consider adding language like that into my contracts with my influencers, that participating in engagement pods and things like that, part of this partnership is not something that's cool. It kind of runs counter to the whole spirit of the endeavor.
Yeah, no, that I love all of that. I appreciate you taking the question from left field yeah. for sure. And thank you so much for coming on and just kind of sharing all of your wisdom.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Katia. It was great.
Thanks.
During my chat with Justin, we discussed the business of influencer marketing from a creator's perspective. Having evolved from being a product manager to creator and then to expert in the space, providing support to other creators, Justin shares his really unique insights. We dove into what a creator should have prepped to share with a brand to land the campaign activation, while also covering what a brand should know about a creator. He provided great tips on what you can do to get the right content from your creators, a bit about influencer payments, and also how to combat fraudulent influencers. And he was definitely speaking my language with his views on influencers taking a long-term approach with brands and so much more. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I wouldn't mind 5 of them. And leave us a review. If you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. That's grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.